Warning.
This show is not for everyone. If you are someone who fancies comfort over truth, preferring to keep to the safe harbors of popular thought that don't contradict accepted mainstream rhetoric, if seeking truth, knowledge, and a greater understanding of this world, both its light and its shadows, holds absolutely no interest for you, then this show is not for you. You are welcome to find your place elsewhere before we take off. But if you are, like a growing number of humanity is, awakening to the fact that we have been lied to about a great many things in the fabric of so-called reality, and if you are ready to peel back some more layers of this onion matrix, or if you are new to the matrix and just would like some good company, and especially if you are humble enough to at least listen to new information and investigate it for yourself before passing judgment, then here is where you are meant to be. Welcome. We are so happy to have you here and welcome you on board as we prepare to take off on our maiden voyage to the outer borders of this reality matrix, where we will learn some of what we were not taught in school. Things absent from the history books, but not absent from history. We invite you to grab a drink, kick back, but buckle up, because it's going to be a bumpy ride as we take off and explore what lies just beyond the veil. My name is Raphael, and I'll be your captain for this ride, and today's maiden show is dedicated to you for having the courage to join us in this exploratory adventure. This rocket ship of a show intends to pierce not only the veil of illusion we are speaking of, but the silence and the mystery of the very literal veil we see in our skies today. What is this veil that we will be casting aside to peer beyond? Ladies and gentlemen, this veil can easily be seen on most days, as it is the very curtain that is laid down by planes in their passing. Now hold on, what? Planes don't lay curtains. No, you're right, they don't. Or they generally don't, rather. And one would agree that by nature they definitely should not be able to. But they do. And a lot, lately. Okay, so they're not called curtains, they're called contrails. And the kind we are especially referring to are the persistent contrails that don't dissipate, but linger and leave a haze of jet cirrus, which is a relatively new term recently coined by NASA a few years ago. I'm talking about those long white lines, those plumes that allegedly come out of the jet exhaust of planes and that can linger for hours, going on for miles, fanning out to create a haze that completely grays out the sun. Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you seen it? If you haven't, don't feel bad. Neither did I for years. I was blind to it, and then bam! I saw it, and my world was changed. One day I looked up, and there were a fleet of planes that had managed to completely block out the sun in the wake of their jet cirrus forming and dispersing metallically, it appeared. It had been a blue sky day, and then one by one, planes laying so-called persistent contrails came out with their exhaust ejection, stealing the blue sky away, till there was not a drop of it left. The hazing out was so complete, so absolute, that my strongest intuition was that this had to be deliberate. But was it? My desire is to shed the veil of mystery round this question, as well as pierce the silence on the visual veil that we are all starting to notice take our blue skies away, yet without commentary from the mainstream press. But why, Raphael? It's just a little bit of harmless jet exhaust and condensation. Didn't you get the memo? Yeah, I got the memo. Condensation is just a normal part of a combustion engine's process when the right atmospheric conditions are present regarding temperature and humidity. That's what the memo says. And if you believe otherwise, you're a conspiracy theorist. Because chemtrails, the term popularly used to describe persistent contrails as something more than just condensation trails, but as deliberate
aerosol spraying don't actually exist and are not real, at least according to the memo. But is this true? Or even relevant? I mean, even if chemtrails are just a myth, we still can and do see curtains or a veil of sorts coming out of a plane. Regardless, these veils are stealing our sunshine away and or forming clouds that feed weather patterns. But no one in the mainstream media is talking about that. Why? Even if these trails are not deliberate, they are affecting climate and temperature. So how is all this silence justified? Shouldn't the consequences of plane exhaust be examined publicly, especially in the days of climate change, global warming debate? Now, please excuse me if you're a veteran on this subject. I'm moving rather slow on it, but for those of you who are newbies out there, I think it is important that you get just how monstrous this elephant in the room is that everyone is not talking about, at least in mainstream media, aka lamestream media. I use the two interchangeably. Let's take conspiracy theory completely out of it. Let's assume for a second that our celestial curtains of giant white clouds are in fact just that exhaust that innocently came out of planes under the right atmospheric conditions and nothing more. Well, what's the trouble with that? Here's the deal. NASA said back in 2004 that they found that cirrus clouds formed by contrails from airplane engine exhaust are capable of increasing average surface temperatures enough to account for a warming trend in the United States that occurred between 1975 and 1994. And they continued saying that their study demonstrates that human activity has a visible and significant impact on cloud cover and therefore climate. Indicates that contrails should be included in climate change scenarios. Again, this was over 10 years ago. Are contrails included in the climate change scenarios in debate? No. Why? NASA also later states in another article of theirs the importance of understanding clouds, that even small changes in the abundance or location of clouds could change the climate more than the anticipated changes caused by greenhouse gases, human-produced aerosols, or other factors associated with global change, and that surely would make persisting contrails, aka jet cirrus, relative to the climate change conversation. But is it in there? No. But wait, there's more. A new study led by scientist Drew Schindel of the NASA Goddard Institute for the Space Studies in New York back in 2008, not so new, found that the mid and high latitudes are especially responsive to changes in the levels of aerosols. The model suggests aerosols likely account for 45% or more of the warming, 45% or more of the warming that has occurred in the Arctic during the last three decades. The results were published in the April issue of Nature Geoscience. Schindel goes on to state that we will have very little leverage over climate in the next decades if we're just going to look at carbon dioxide. If we want to stop the Arctic summer sea ice from melting completely over the next few decades, we're much better off looking at aerosols and ozone. That was over a half a decade ago. And have we? No. Why? If persistent contrails are all a natural part of the combustion process, as allegedly claimed, even though there are many who say that this is not possible, but assuming they are natural, quote unquote, then why all this silence on the problem of clouds that are formed? Why only a slight reference to it in the odd article here and there buried underneath a sea of CO2 complaints? But artificial man-made clouds are not just accidental, even if you stay completely away from conspiracy theory. After all, there is such a thing as weather modification. Well, that's fact, and not theory. Anyone can modify the weather. Given enough money, of course, but you don't just have to be big gov. You, dear listener, you out there can go to weathermodification.com right now and purchase you some rain. Pause this program and go check that I'm not full of it right now. Cloud seeding is well over 50 years old, and the history of weather modification goes back, well, over 100 years. Man has always been fascinated with controlling the elements, controlling anything he can get his hands on, really. We're not going into great detail on the subject of weather modification history in this show. It's too expansive, too extensive, and it'll require many, many shows to lay out the landscape in its entirety. So we recommend you tune in on a regular basis to keep up, catch up on the history, some of the documented parts of the history that we can be sure of. And boy, is it fascinating. So you won't want to miss it. But the point is, weather-changing technologies not only exist, but have been employed in full-swing operations at different levels long before climate change concerns were even on the radar. Actually, this is the subject for another show, but there is a history of desiring global warming by the international banking business corporate elite for purposes of accessing the Arctic reserves of oil and other natural resources. And global warming wasn't always viewed as a potentially bad thing and was actually desired. So, to get back on track, climate engineering and changing technologies exist, are and have been employed for decades, are underreported on by both media and government monitoring agencies, and completely left out of the history taught in our classrooms, even though its history is generally hidden in plain sight via the mountain of documents and paperwork that abound and trails behind this issue, suggesting that these persistent clouds are not only deliberate, but even, dare we say it, weaponized. That's right, not only does history show an intent to harness the weather as a force multiplier in written documentation, as in the Air Force's 1997 research paper entitled Owning the Weather by 2025, but in practice as well. We weaponized weather back in Vietnam, extending the monsoon season several months beyond its natural course and taking out bridges along the Ho Chi Minh Trail during Project Popeye with just a few simple cloud seeding projects. And Congress didn't find out about it for a whole decade before the UN, United Nations, passed their NMOD Treaty, Environmental Modification Treaty, back in 1978, banning the use of technology that allows for the weaponization of the environment. Exotic weapons ban. But even so, one might refuse to acknowledge that persistent contrails are weather modification, citing that cloud seeding doesn't resemble contrail formation like we see in the persistent ones. This line of thinking assumes two things. That one, weather modification doesn't have various methods of deployment, as patents do tell us in the 1991 patents 5003186 for the stratospheric Wells box seeding for reduction of global warming, for instance, and two, that there isn't historical evidence that proves the contrary, that persistent contrails do in fact affect the weather and warming, and that the military knew this as far back as 1970, as reported in the paper, on the possibility of weather modification by aircraft contrails. An earlier weather control proposal written in 1945 for the U.S. Air Force by Vladimir Zorkin not only brings up the occasional occurrence of rare persistent contrails and their effect on creating jet stars, but states that, quote, in discussion of the energy for weather control, one cannot avoid reference to the possible utilization of atomic power, but adequate knowledge of the absorption and reflection of different types of surfaces will permit utilization of that other great source of power, the sun, quote unquote. And now what do we have? Worldwide reports of contrail pollution that is altering skies, turning blue skies into overcast haze, while being completely ignored on the evening weather report by our local and national meteorologists. A hyper focus on CO2 as a cause of climate change and global warming, while the mainstream rhetoric completely ignores the literature that states clouds and aerosols have a far greater impact. And now, despite our complaints that these clouds have been taking our skies away, being completely ignored by lamestream media all these years, except of course when briefly ridiculized and dismissing the subject, we are told that geoengineering the planet might very well be our only hope of delaying the disastrous effects that mounting CO2 threatens on the planet. Well, that's all very fine and dandy, but oughtn't we not be honest and explore the effects that clouds and jet cirrus has had on warming and weather already? And not only have studies such as IOP science on the impact of geoengineering aerosols on stratospheric temperature and ozone shown that geoengineering has a short-term cooling effect, but a long-term warming effect, but as the Smithsonian Institute recently remarked, contrails may be doing an inadvertent geoengineering of sorts. Of course, they must not have been aware of the report on the possibility of modifying the weather via contrails written a few decades prior that we mentioned earlier in this program. But again, despite our complaints, the media lays silent on reporting on the important milestones of weather modification's history, failing to report on both where the climate engineering technology is actually at today and its effects on local weather. Weather modification is never credited, nor is contrail-formed clouds recognized for their part in forming overcast days. Why? My team and I had some questions, so when the American Meteorological Society decided to have their annual conference in New Orleans in 2016, we took it upon ourselves to attend. Despite our limited means and finances, we found a little place where we could sit across from the Starbucks coffee where people were going to and from, and we were able to engage with a few of the folks that we came across that day and ask them their thoughts about geoengineering and hear what their reservations were and also why they were inclined to not believe geoengineering was already going on.
The following were a few of the typical reasons we were given as to why.
Doing the weather modification using satellites?
No, NOAA doesn't participate in any weather modification.
Okay. Is anybody doing that with satellites?
No, you really can't do anything with satellites.
Yeah.
So weather modification, most don't do just because it's expensive and we don't know if it really works. So, China's experimenting with it now, but you can't verify that it's working.
Right, you mean with satellites?
Oh, well, no, just in general. Satellites don't really contribute to any type of modification.
But, I come from the financial world. I've been a financial advisor for 30 years. So the people that are involved in things like green credits, carbon sequestration credits, they're more likely to jump to a conclusion about this is a really good idea.
Just save your money now and it's worth the next 10 years. Great.
Let's see what's the question about that. Is that meteorologists that I've talked to so far are sort of like in agreement with me that it's not necessarily a great idea to fill the sky with whatever it is we're trying to fill the sky with.
Right, yeah,
because
we don't know.
Yeah,
absolutely. We don't know whether, the climate function is very complicated.
Is it? Is the science really complicated? That's what we're told over and over and over that day. The science is really complicated. And no one agreed it was a good thing. Geoengineering was definitely not a good idea. There was a lot of uncertainty to it, and we shouldn't be doing it. But most everybody didn't believe we were doing it. It was very enlightening. And some believed it was too expensive. But is it?
The little picture is from a nanofabrication study, which shows you can make very high quality, and do this in just a jet in a very simple way, make high quality aluminum particles just by spraying aluminum vapor out, which oxidizes. So it's certainly in principle possible to do that. There's a big literature that's already looked at that. And you could do that by either building new versions of these aircraft or even re-engineering existing aircraft. So there's some ideas of that. So you go to an engineering firm and you want this done. They don't say this is hard or unusual. They say, okay, yes, we could do it. Aerosol geoengineering looks like it is so cheap that the cost is basically not going to be an issue. That means that implementation decisions will be risk-to-risk decisions. The risk of doing it against the risk of not doing it. And it makes the problem of how we govern it fundamentally harder and different and normal. So I've told you this, cheap to deliver materials to the stratosphere, and I'm convinced that's true. I don't think that will change. But I think the more we do research, the less easy this will look, the more complicated the environmental effects will look. And that's a good thing, because right now it looks too easy. So I think that if we do more research, we're likely to find out that it's harder and more complicated than we thought, and that the side effects are harder to manage. And that's a healthy outcome that will make it easier to do the management. Of course, the opposite reaction is possible. It's an empirical question, how people will actually react to knowledge about this. Another reaction is to say, if these crazy scientists are so concerned about putting CO2 in the atmosphere, they want to think about these things, then that might actually mean we should be more serious about the risks of CO2 in the atmosphere. And by the way, it's not really a moral hazard. It's more like free riding on our grandkids. And by the way, it's not really a moral hazard. It's more like free riding on our grandkids.
So not only does David Keith educate us on the ease of geoengineering and the low cost of geoengineering, but his concerns that this low cost and ease would make governance an issue. As many people would be scampering to use this technology, it would make it harder to do the magic, quote unquote. Now, it is being denied that geoengineering is going on right now. Yet millions of people are reporting seeing what looks exactly like geoengineering going on in front of their eyes every day, worldwide, in most places in the world. Some places don't experience this phenomena of persistent contrails, which has been exponentially complained about and reported on since the mid-90s, even though persistent trails go back further, but those that fan out, forming weather, blocking out the sun on blue sky days, doing it one day, another day not, coming out of dislocated nozzles, sometimes out of drones, sometimes out of something that must be some sort of jet fuel mixture. The patents abound, the different ways that this program could be carried out, the intention, the motivation, the history of weaponization. It is nothing new. There's every reason to assume that this is going on. But apparently,
despite this sea of evidence, deniers persist, like the clouds coming out of the trails, coming out of the plains. And they say that we're lacking the nail in the coffin trail analysis. That only that would prove that the trails are indeed not just coincidental side effect of aviation, but deliberate manipulation of atmospheric conditions mixed with metallic sprays or jet additives or whatever the method. Patents abound. The lack of reporting consistency. The WMO itself has a report that lists the nations involved in weather modification projects and nations absent from weather modification projects. So here we have 2003 amongst projects, but in the list of nations not reporting modification projects in 2003, 2004, we have United States is not listed amongst projects. But in the list of nations not reporting modification projects in 2003, 2004, we have United States, NOAA, listed as non-participants. Yet how can that be? Because it's not a matter of theory, a matter of history, rather. We know to the contrary, this is not true. The United States was indeed involved in weather modification in 2003 and 4, as per Texas weather modification history tells us. And it's a matter of public records. It's not even denied. You just don't hear about it on the evening news. So where is the discrepancy taking place? At what level of reporting? The state reports to NOAA, NOAA reports to WMO. So who dropped the ball?
And here we have another World Meteorological Organization, WMO, document report from expert team on weather modification research for 2012-2013. Look at mine over here. Current catalog of countries active in weather modification activities. The following list of countries with weather modification programs was assembled from several sources. WMO maintained a register of national weather modification programs. The WMO published the proceedings of its 10th scientific conference on weather modification, with most of the papers report on weather modification in the author's home countries. WMO 212. Finally, the membership of the team provided information on activities that they were involved in. The list created in this fashion identifies 42 countries with active weather modification projects. Okay, so let's see. America is not here. They call it the United States, so we're not going to see it. America is not listed here either. Let's go to United States of America, United Arab Emirates, and Uzbekistan. In Zimbabwe, Syria, Spain, South Africa. Oh, and yet we're told, weather modification is not effective. It's a lot of people participating in ineffective, active weather modification programs. Okay, and that's what we know of, but we see that there is already a discrepancy in the reporting between actual historical documentation with Texas history and the fact that WMO said the United States was not reporting any weather modification. But here we're not listed yet. In the same document, if you go down, the list of countries active in weather modification programs provide an overview of the countries that are active in this field. The investments in operational weather modification program vary greatly. A few interesting numbers are as follows. China, by far, has the largest investment in both operational programs and weather modification research programs. Every province except one has an active weather modification program in China. Wow, you think it's not effective? After China, the USA, Thailand, and India have the largest investment in operational weather modification programs. There are currently active operational weather modification programs in at least 9 states located in the western United States, with oftentimes multiple cloud seeding projects in the individual states. California, Nevada, Utah, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, North Dakota, Kansas, and Texas. While funding for weather modification has increased over the past 5 years in the USA, it is still well below the levels in the 1980s. India is currently one of the largest investors in weather modification research, with a major multi-year program conducted by the Indian Institute of Tropical Meteorology in Pune, India. Thailand is also embarking on a major research effort in this area. Anyway, there are now several operational programs around the world that have conducted cloud seeding annually for more than 50 years without interruption. In the USA and Australia, these programs are mostly supported by hydroelectric power companies. Two major research programs in weather modification to enhance snowpack are currently ongoing in the U.S., namely in Wyoming, including modeling and field work in part funded by the National Science Foundation, and Idaho, modeling funded by Idaho Power. A smaller research project has been started in the state of Texas. Okay, so why they said the U.S. is not participating in active weather modification programs earlier in the same report, I have no idea. Weather modification and geoengineering. The interaction between current weather modification activities and needs and the advance of geoengineering activities and needs. The team decided it is desirable for WMO to state its position to GE. There are many aspects common to both GE, geoengineering, and weather modification, but at different spatial scales. It was also stated that if we still do not understand what the modification at small scales, understanding what the impacts of geoengineering would be at large global scales should be seen as a major challenge. It was also decided that a statement on geoengineering should not be a part of the weather modification research statement, and geoengineering in its totality should not be considered as part of the mandate of the ETWMR, because there are several aspects that do not relate to clouds and GE that fall outside the scope of expertise of the committee. So they're going to separate weather modification from geoengineering in their reporting. Okay. So, why is it that we were told that most don't do weather modification back at the convention? This is simply not the case. This is simply not the case.
So, not only do we have a history of weaponization and patents that abound and a lack of reporting that we've just documented here,
but we also have the evidence for the understanding that
in actuality, clouds do play a significant part in global warming and climate change. As we can clearly see in the NASA document, The Importance of Understanding Clouds, even small changes in the abundance and location of clouds could change the climate more than the anticipated changes caused by greenhouse gases, human produced aerosols, and other factors associated with global change. Yet this is nothing new, despite this article being written back in 2011, 2007. We already have a 1970 document entitled On the Possibility of Weather Modification by Aircraft Contrails,
which clearly states the possible effect of contrails in modifying the weather is reconsidered in the light of information obtained ground-level contrails in Alaska. It appears likely that inadvertent cloud seeding by jet aircraft may be of the same order of magnitude as that attained in commercial cloud seeding operations. Further investigation is needed, but in the meantime, the possibility of contrail contamination should be kept in mind when evaluating the results of seeding operations. Aircraft contrails first attracted public attention during World War II, but as air traffic has built up to its present level, they have come to be accepted as part of the environment. Even World War II, it was difficult to watch the cloud cover laid down by a large bomber formation without wondering what it might be doing to the weather. At present, there is widespread belief among the general public and some feeling among scientists, Fletcher 1969, Ranking 68, Livingston 69, and Schaefer 69, that contrails are increasing cloudiness, if nothing more, in some regions. Not all regions, like we're seeing now. The writer himself has seen instances in which a single contrail seemed to grow until it became an overcast covering the whole sky. If the contrail were indeed responsible, which is by no means certain, let us not assume any liability more than we need to at this time. This would constitute definite proof that contrails are capable of a significant effect on local weather and even possibly on global climate. If such occurrences are widespread and frequent, it seems worthwhile, in view of all this, to consider quantitatively whether or not there is reason to believe contrails are capable of exerting a significant influence on weather. Yet still, this is not the earliest documentation of persistent contrails forming weather. There is actually earlier documentation talking about the phenomena of persistent contrails and the potential for applying that to warfare technology.
In October 1945, Vladimir K. Zorkin, Associate Research Director at the Radio Corporation of America, RCA Laboratory in Princeton, wrote his influential but now all but forgotten mimeographed Outline of Weather Proposal. This was in October of 1945. He began discussing the importance of to meteorology of accurate prediction, which he thought was entering a new era. Blah, blah, blah. Zorkin suggested that exact scientific weather knowledge might allow for effective weather control. In this proposal, he states, "The phenomenon of vapor trails behind aircraft is a good example of triggering. If the atmosphere is in the right condition, these trails grow considerably. Most striking is the report of a German meteorologist who observed and photographed the trails from only three airplanes over Salisbury to develop into an overcast in the space of less than an hour. In a discussion of the energy for weather control, one cannot avoid reference to the possible utilization of atomic power, but adequate knowledge of the absorption and reflection of different types of surfaces will permit utilization of that other great source of power, the sun. The second part of the answer to the argument that weather control requires great expenditure of energy is for the predicting computer to answer. Whether the results and benefits warrant the expenditure, however large or small. So here we have the earlier stated recognition of persistent trails, as well as the possibility of the utilization of these trails to harness a greater source of power, namely the sun. And what do we have now? Global reports of persistent contrails in all sorts of conditions, relative or not? Artificial clouds coming from planes that we know are contributing to climate change, yet we are called crazy? Conspiracy theorists for saying so. And yet, the literature has acknowledged these trails, their persistence, and their relevance to weather. History tells us what once was considered a weapon by the Nazis, a sun gun, to use to burn up cities and towns as the ultimate, most dreadful weapon, was more recently, yet prior to Owning the Weather 2025, written about in the Air Force Spacecast 2020, Air University's research document suggesting a system of orbital mirrors to control terrestrial weather. And the history of weaponization, again, in Vietnam, not discovered by Congress for 10 years in Project Popeye, not till the mid-70s would word of this get out, and still not to the general public, even though it is a matter of records and public access. It's not hidden, it's just not advertised. We weaponized weather. We have every intention of weaponizing weather. It is in the research projects. It is in the intent. We have the Secretary of Defense admitting that indeed our enemies have the capacity to set off volcanoes, trigger earthquakes, and control the weather. Yet we do not. So we have shown that regardless whether climate engineering is accidental or weaponized and deliberate, it is irrelevant, because these clouds are affecting weather. They're coming out of the plains. And geoengineers say they want to do this. Yet meteorologists we met at the AMS conference didn't think geoengineering was a good idea, or that it was going on, because, as they repeated from the same songbooks, it was too costly, ineffective, dangerous, but necessary, perhaps soon. To quote geoengineer Ken Caldera, if you have cancer, you might decide that eating a poison is the right thing to do because it's going to kill the cancer cells more than the good cells. And I look at geoengineering much the same way. Now let's break this down for a minute, because what are the good cells? The good cells are humans. The cancer cells, well, that's the global warming. But the good cells, that's you, and that's me. And we might have to go in the name of saving the bigger picture, which is not you or me. This is a really big decision. I mean, what about all the natural cures to cancer? What if we want to try that? Don't we have a say in this? Or are we left out of the discussion? Where are we in the dialogue? Shut out, left out of the conversation?
Why? Why are we not invited to talk? What is so important that it is considered too great for us to be bothered with? Why is this very persistent cloud-making, weather-making jet cirrus being left out of the language of the meteorologists doing the weather reports? Why is the weather modification being left out of the World Meteorological Reports? why is there only a half-truth on reporting, a diminished cataloging that is not fully representative of what is actually being conducted and does not include military testing, nor all private programs, as we have seen by the World Meteorological's own reporting? Why are we left out of this conversation? Why are the meteorologists who are aware of the subject of geoengineering completely disillusioned about the reality of geoengineering, namely that it is too costly, that it is ineffective, or weather modification is, that geoengineering is very complicated? It's true, we don't know what the consequences are, but it doesn't mean we can't manage the effects of it, or that it's not in effect. I mean the contrary. We have the evidence to the contrary. We have skies that have disappeared more and more, increasingly, even in the last 5 years. We have jet engines, which some say should produce less contrails, but they produce more. But the debunkers say, no. They produce more contrails now. So they're more likely to produce contrails. Well, guess what? We know that contrails affect the weather. So if they're more likely to produce contrails, do you think we need to talk about it? Do you think it's time we talk about it? Why are we not talking about climate-changing technologies at a time when climate change is changing the world? The world and its politics. Oh, granted, we don't live in a vacuum, so there's other things going on, but if you think the Paris talks were just coincidentally following the terrorist attacks, that's one hell of a coincidence, buddy. One hell of a coincidence, and one hell of a convenience for the climate change talks, because nobody could get near with any climate change concerns. So your talks can stick to carbon credits, which will do nothing to change the climate change situation. Because if you keep ignoring climate changing technologies, if you keep undermining the effectiveness of weather modification, the wild scale applications of weather modification, both commercial, overt, but not publicized, as well as covert. And we saw that governance is an issue because it was going to be so easy once people realized this. It would make it harder to do the magic. Are we seeing the magic coming out of the planes in our skies now? Because it's pretty magical. Whether it's dark magic or not, we won't get into. But it's pretty magical to have your sun taken away by a fleet of planes, day in and day out, and no one talks about it publicly. And the one that does point it out is ridiculed, if they're even acknowledged, ostracized by their community, their family, their loved ones, who had respect for them until they opened their eyes and they dared open their mouth. But we're not even allowed to open our mouths. And those who are the leaders in our meteorological community, they just repeat the same song, not based on any actual research. Apparently, it's the peer-reviewed papers that will keep the rhetoric right where it needs to be. Where are we in the debate? Where are you in this conversation? What are you doing to further it? You don't have to know everything to start asking questions. Let's start asking questions from the meteorologists. Let's tell them when they tell us, when we listen to them, why they don't believe geoengineering is going on. Let's explain to them why we think it is. Let's explain to them where the songbook they were given had false notes, and let's set that music straight. shall we? Stop chemtrails. Stop geoengineering. Start climate engineering awareness in your community. You can't be debunked when you operate from a historical aspect. Just start telling people the history of weather modification. Start looking into the reports. Start looking into the tangible aspects. Don't worry about chemtrails per se. Yes, they are chemtrails. Whatever they are, whether they're deliberate or accidental, they are chemtrails. But hey, you're right. We don't have the nail in the coffin trail analysis. That's not our job to do. That's really actually kind of hard to do. So we ask that the EPA do it. What happens when you go to your leaders and your officials and you ask them to answer a few questions? Those that are in charge of environmental air quality. What happens?
Good morning. My name is Amanda Bays, and I live in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to you today. For the past 5 years, I have documented aircraft emitting trails across the sky. I have taken hundreds of videos and thousands of photographs of these persisting emissions. Many of the aircraft I have witnessed appear to be spraying something into the atmosphere. Uneasy with my observations, I wanted to know exactly what was causing the aircraft to leave visible trails that did not dissipate. I reached out to local, state, and federal government agencies for information and assistance. What I experienced was disillusioning, to say the least. When I called the EPA, I was told that the FAA handled aircraft emissions. When I called the FAA, they told me to call the EPA. I was shuttled from office to office with no agency ever accepting responsibility or accountability. My calls were not returned, nor were my concerns ever addressed. The sage advice I finally received from the EPA was to hire a plane and do my own testing. This was especially disheartening since I had been led to believe that the Environmental Protection Agency was the ultimate protector of the environment. Additionally, the EPA advised me to contact the Department of Environmental Quality for the state of Virginia. Not surprisingly, the DEQ informed me that they do not regulate mobile sources of emissions, don't go to airports, and don't check what is being loaded on planes. As for my request for my yard to be tested for heavy metal, chemical, or biological contamination, I was told that the Virginia DEQ could not use state money to test for those materials. Furthermore, my complaint was in an area that they had no authority to investigate, another dead end. I reported Naval Air Station Oceana military jets for dumping fuel over my neighborhood and spoke with at least 30 individuals at the base. I finally spoke with Terry Chamberlain, head of the environmental office at Oceana. Mr. Chamberlain bluntly informed me that the military regulates itself. Needless to say, they continue to dump unburnt fuel over the residents living close to the base. For several years, I electronically reported on airplane pollution using the environmental violations form on EPA's website, epa.gov/tips. It was referred to me by an ASRC federal contractor working for the EPA. I have always included my contact information on the tip report and identified specific aircraft that can easily be traced. No one from the EPA has investigated any of my formerly filed complaints. Since I became interested in the possible dangers of chemical spraying in the environment, I have contacted the Virginia Pollution Control Board, National Weather Service, Oceana and Dam Neck military bases, NOAA, NASA, the Department of Defense, Brookhaven National Laboratory, the Department of Energy, the Department of Homeland Security, FEMA, the Health Department, the Department of Travel, countless federal agents and operators, the Virginia Beach Police Department, and even the White House, all to no avail. To date, no one from any agency has investigated my complaints. I was told to talk to my local representatives. Every agency I contacted responded to my reports by telling me that I was seeing condensation from engine exhaust. Aircraft engines do emit water vapor, of course, but vapor that quickly dissipates. What I was witnessing was persistent and long-lasting. How can anyone reasonably conclude that a particular aircraft emission is merely a contrail without testing it? That is both unscientific and irresponsible.
My name is Alexandra May Hunter, and I'm an environmental law specialist. I've been practicing law for over 24 plus years here in the United States, and environmental law is one of my subspecialties. And a little over 3 years ago, it came to my attention that there were airplanes that were emitting aerosol plumes into the atmosphere. I watched the documentary, What in the World Are They Spraying? And then I stepped outside, and unbeknownst to me, I had not realized that, in fact, this was happening. So what I did was I called up the EPA in Chicago, and I spoke to a senior ranking officer at the EPA in Chicago and told him who I was and my concerns. And he started out with the script, you know, the propaganda script that these are condensation trails, et cetera, et cetera. And within about 5 minutes, 5 to 8 minutes, I would say, I wore the guy down and told him, I'm not going to buy into your script. And he imparted to me that indeed this was a United States Air Force program. They had been, of course, in contact with the EPA, and that they had told the EPA that everything was fine. So I said to this gentleman, if in fact that's the case, I would like you to fax me immediately EIS statements, which are environmental impact statements, an EIS, to evidence that what was being sprayed into the troposphere was indeed just condensation and that there was no need for any concern whatsoever. And he said, no, they had not done any EISs. And I told him, well, then you're not doing your job, because as the Environmental Protection Agency, that branch of the government, in theory, we have checks and balances, and you just don't take a talking point from another agency and say, okay, without doing your job. So right there, I knew that we got a problem, because I've just had a senior officer admit to me this is a United States Air Force program, which, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. So that began the journey of me doing a very, very intense amount of research and due diligence on the historical background of the programs, governments involved in it, the agencies involved in it, the NGOs, the scientific aspect of it, you know, the whole historical buildup from the UN and how they were perpetrating an environmental fraud on civilizations.
So until the day that the EPA or whatever other government organization decides to take it upon themselves to actually check air quality and monitor pollution from all sources, be they deliberate or accidental, until the day that our complaints get serious investigation and not some blow-off puppet show hearing that never gets addressed later on, until that day I will have to rely on my own evidence, on my own eyes, on my own research. And until that day, I will not stop asking questions until they are satisfied, or the chemicals stop showing up in my baby's blood and hair analysis test and the soil analysis tests, and the trees stop dying and blue skies start returning. That is my commitment. And I intend for this show to be a vehicle to honoring that commitment. In that spirit, each month we will not only explore some of the different aspects of this highly veiled issue, examining the history of weather modification as well as the progress of geoengineering, while awaiting a statement from meteorologists on why they neglect to mention Jet Cirrus in their weather forecast outlook or recap, but we'll also highlight what various grassroots organizers are doing to get the message out in their own communities. Featuring different voices monthly will help keep the points of the issue exclusively from being in the hands of any potential gatekeepers, as any movement is suspect of having a couple. A little bit about myself, who I am. I was born in Paris, France. I grew up in L.A., Los Angeles, and I've been in L.A., Louisiana, in New Orleans specifically, for 2 decades now. Not to date how old I am, but it's been a while. I'm a recovering liberal who is so far beyond the veil of polarization that I no longer subscribe to any partisan politics. I did take an oath to defend my country from enemies foreign and domestic, and I have done my best to uphold that oath. But other than that, I am no one. I'm just a mother, a massage therapist, a former performance artist, an activist, and now your captain and tour guide for this past hour, who got to take you along for the beginning of our very long voyage across and beyond the veil. Join us next month as we continue to explore and dive into what is causing the haze that takes our blue skies away and why. And going wherever that conversation takes us. No subject is too taboo for just one little hour. So until then, and until next time.
And now until we meet again next time. And now until we meet again next time. And now until we meet again next time. And now until we meet again next time.